44.
This is an encore edition of Charlotte Talks, so we won't be able to take your phone calls this hour.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Is there a person alive who has not heard of Meadowlark Lemon? Probably not. He is a basketball legend. He's even in the NBA Hall of Fame, but he made his name as a member of a non-NBA team, the Harlem Globetrotters. There were other legends on the Globetrotters roster over the years, but Lemon leads them all because of his extraordinary skill on the court, which was augmented by his talents outside of basketball. He may be the clown prince of basketball, but he's also an actor. He's done commercial work. He's appeared in movies and a television series as the owner of a sports store on the NBC television sitcom Hello, Larry. Anybody remember that show? He's recorded numerous albums, some for kids, some for adults. He's an ordained minister and a motivational speaker. And Meadowlark Lemon is in Charlotte to be the keynote speaker for an evening at the Halton Theater tonight called Film People, part of CPCC's Arts Fest. And we are proud and pleased to have Meadowlark Lemon join us this hour. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. You're here because of the pleadings of George Cochran, who is a formidable force to deal with, I am told. Huh?
That is right. He's an animal. George, you're an animal.
As of today, if I did the math right, correct me if I'm wrong, as of today, you are exactly 1 month shy of your 76th birthday. Is that right?
Not quite. Not quite.
What is today's day? Isn't your birthday April 25th?
Yes, but they got some things mixed up.
Okay. You know,
Satchel Paige told me once. Satchel Paige, the audience know who Satchel Paige he told me, he called me Mule. He said, Mule, you're going to go through the same thing I'm going through. I didn't understand what he meant then, but it's about I'm proud of my age. And he told me, he said, never let anybody know how old you are. He said, because they'll keep talking about it. And they'll keep talking about you, which is a good thing.
Well, you look 40.
Thank you, sir. That's a good thing.
now, they're probably, I don't know whether Satchel Paige meant this or not, but as you become more famous and you linger in your field of endeavor and you do other things as you have, people begin to write about you and the facts begin to blur and become not necessarily accurate or true. I don't want to say that, but there's a new thing called Wikipedia on the internet. Do you know about Wikipedia?
I don't know about Wikipedia.
Well, Wikipedia is an encyclopedia that is contributed to by ordinary people. You can write an article for Wikipedia. You can go in and correct the article about yourself. There's an article about Meadowlark Lemon. And I got a lot of this stuff from that article. I don't know if it's true or not. Yeah. But we'll find out.
Yes.
you started, it says, with the Harlem Globetrotters in 1952 and went full-time in 54. Did they get that right?
They got that all totally wrong.
Okay. When the show is over, we're going to go on Wikipedia and you're going to write the article for them. So when did you try out for the Harlem Globetrotters?
I got out of the Army December of 54.
Okay.
And I went with a team called the Kansas City All-Stars, which was a farm team of the Globetrotters, for 2 months because the seasons were ending for me. And at the time, they had three teams touring the country. So I went with what we call the Southern part of the team, mm-hmm. which means that we had three teams traveling, playing against us, alternating. Plus, we played against a lot of the local teams in the cities that we went into. So I stayed with the Southern team for 2 months and about 3 weeks with the Kansas City All-Stars. And the 56-57 season was really my first season with the Globetrotters.
Okay. people look at the Harlem Globetrotters as an entity today, and they just take it for granted that they've always been out there, because they've been out there since, what, 1926, something like that?
27, yeah.
Always been out there, and they've always played the kind of basketball that we today think of as the Harlem Globetrotters basketball, brand of basketball, kind of comedic trick shots, always winning,
yes.
Never losing.
No, that's not quite completely correct. Okay.
But that's not how it started out. It started out as a regular knockdown basketball team, right?
Yes, from what I understand. When I spoke to, I became friends of Abe Saperstein, who started the basketball team, from some kids playing in the streets. And, he came out of baseball because he was a baseball man. And most of the Globetrotters at one time were baseball players. Ted Strong, they were trying to find Ted Strong, who was one of the best basketball players of all time, because they wanted him to play baseball. They went after Ted before they went after Jackie Robinson. That's how good he was. And they couldn't find him. He left the team, I think, up in the Dakotas. So he just stayed up there during the off season, which was a couple of months. And so they couldn't find him when they were looking for the baseball player.
Huh.
Yeah. But all the players were, most of the players were good athletes.
And the reason there was a Harlem Globetrotters, it seems very strange to think about today, but black teams, black guys couldn't play on the white teams.
Well, at the time, when they started, I don't think the NBA had started.
No, it hadn't.
No. Mm-mm. So these were guys just playing in the sandlot. And Abe saw something, and he was the promoter. And he said, maybe I got something here. Mm-hmm. So he put them in a ballroom. And they were called the Chicago Ballroom Five. So that's how it started. And Abe, I knew, he was about 4 feet two. And he said he could play basketball. From what I understand, Abe couldn't play basketball, but he put the team together.
Yeah.
And I think he became the sixth man at one time. They traveled in an old T model or A model Ford car, and they just toured Illinois. And they started calling the team Harlem Globetrotters. Harlem because they wanted to associate with black ball players. Uh-huh. Globetrotters because they wanted to tour the state totally of Illinois. And that's how they got their name, Globetrotter.
Yeah. Well, you were born and raised in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. Not too far from here, about 8 hours, 6 hours. How did you know about this team? What was your first exposure to them when you were a kid?
When I was 11 years old. Well, we didn't play basketball. I heard about basketball, but they said it was a non-touch sport, so we didn't want anything to do with that. We played baseball and football because it was a touch sport. Football, when I was 12, 13 years old, we were playing tackle football against the college teams who come down and scrimmage against us. We played baseball.
And you were just kids on the street? And college
yeah.
And college teams would come down and play with you?
Yeah, play against us to get in shape, yes.
God, different world.
Yes, it sure is. baseball, we call baseball a touch sport because, you know, we didn't throw across the plate. We'd throw at each other. So you so you had time to get out of the way. Michael Jordan comes from that era also. Area and he was a really good baseball player. They used to call him the Rabbit. He was so fast. And I think Michael wanted to play professional baseball.
I would think the skills for baseball and basketball are very different, are they not?
Yes. I think trying to hit a fastball or a curveball or a slider is the hardest feat in any sport. I think it is so difficult. You know,
it's harder than doing what you do with that flip around to back it up into the net.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes. That's one of the most difficult feats there is. I don't see how Barry Bonds hit as many home runs as he hit. That is so difficult to do. And I guess that's why people are talking about, you know, we shouldn't take these whatever they take to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that is one of the most difficult things there is. And I don't like baseball today because I like to see people play it, but I didn't like it because they threw at me, they would hit me, and they would hurt me, and I said, I'm not going to ever play baseball.
Well, wait a minute. You're the guy that said you didn't want to play basketball because it wasn't a touch sport. You were asking for it.
Yes. And when I learned how to play, I would shoot off a contact, which was stupid. That was the most stupidest thing to do. Wait till somebody hit you so you could shoot. And that's the way I grew up. That's why I played close to the basket. And what happened, the guys kept getting bigger, and I stopped getting bigger. I stopped growing.
Yeah.
And that's how I developed the hook shot, running away.
Meadowlark Lemon is our guest from the former member of the Harlem Globetrotters, has his own team now, our guest today on WFAE. I want to get back to the beginning, because, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters, the whole world was different back then, and we didn't have television, and we didn't have all the things, all the media mechanisms that we have today. So what was it about, because I read, and this may not be true, that once you saw them, you wanted to play for the Globetrotters.
The first time I saw them, I was in the Ritz Theater, and we would go to the Ritz Theater every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And we would stay in the Ritz Theater from 10 to 2 minutes to 8 in the evening.
Wow.
And I had to be home at 8 o'clock. So I was a block and a half from the Ritz Theater, and I could run home in a minute. Because when my dad said, be home at 8 o'clock, he didn't mean 1 minute past 8. He meant 8 o'clock. And those people didn't know anything about child abuse. So you would be home at 8 o'clock. But
or what?
The worst sound I've ever heard was my daddy's belt coming through the belt loop. So it wasn't any talk back to your parents then. You didn't talk back. These people meant business.
Uh-huh.
And but the Ritz Theater, we would watch 5 cartoons, 3 westerns, and anything else they put on the screen, and the newsreel. And I saw these men in the dressing room that were singing, and they were really talking to each other, and they were really subtle. You know, the dressing rooms weren't that good. It's just a place to change clothes.
This is on film? You saw this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the minute they walked on the basketball court, everything changed. You know, there wasn't any high-fiving and all in the low-fiving. Everything changed. They seemed to make that ball talk.
Hmm.
And I took notice. And I said, this is what I want to do.
Were they playing the kind of basketball then that you ended up playing with the Globetrotters? The trick shot, comedic stuff?
Yes. But what we did was, we took it several steps higher. You know, they were deliberate in their moves. They had fundamental skills. You could see that to do what they did. And that's what I wanted. I wanted that from the moment I saw it.
I want to talk about that because that's what you're talking about tonight. Vision and dreams and realizing your dreams. Meadowlark Lemon is our guest. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Glad you're along with us for this encore edition of Charlotte Talks on WFAE, made possible in part by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, whose new progress report features digital media innovators. More online at knightfoundation.org. And by Theater Charlotte's The Last Night of Ballyhoo, a romantic comedy set in Atlanta during the world premiere of Gone with the Wind, playing November 6th through 16th. Tickets at carolinatix.org. We're coming up on Monday on Charlotte Talks. Last night, we went to Hickory to Lenore Ryan College and spoke with Jonathan Kozel. He's perhaps one of the biggest critics of this nation's education system, but his criticism is aimed at making the schools better. He'll join us on Monday as we rebroadcast the Lenore Ryan recording with his recommendations and to address the mania of testing over teaching. That's all coming up Monday morning at 9 on 90.7 WFAE and Charlotte Talks.
The Friday News Roundup. Barack Obama begins the transition from candidate to commander-in-chief. Republicans regroup after Tuesday's losses, and Californians ban gay marriage in their state. The Diane Rehm Show, Friday.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, right after Charlotte Talks, each weekday morning from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE, your NPR news source.
Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that wicked man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
The famous Harlem Globetrotter theme song, Sweet George Brown, Metal Arc Lemon from the Globetrotters, our guest today in our Spirit Square studio at WFAE on Charlotte Talks. He's the keynote speaker tonight at Film People at the Halton Theater at 7:30 as a part of CPCC's Arts Fest. Before we talk about that, and before we talk about vision and dreams, you said something when you were talking about your parents, about those people meant business. You have 10 kids.
Yes.
Have you raised them like that?
They won't let me raise them like that anymore. We still have two at home.
Uh-huh. Lucky you.
Yes. I hope those two never leave.
Really?
Yeah. Crystal, she's 19.
Okay.
She's in junior college. And Caleb, he thinks he's smarter than all of the other kids put together. He's 13. And he's homeschooled.
Okay.
And Angela, she left home for the fifth time a year ago.
They keep coming back.
Oh, yeah, they come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got to have their place.
Do you like that?
Sometimes.
Because that seems to be the wave of the future.
Bring other people with them. I tell the kids, you know, stay home and get your free rent.
Uh-huh.
You know, but don't keep bringing other people with you. It goes, it's kind of tough there.
Yeah, free rent's one thing, free food's another, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
I read that when you were in high school and you had decided that basketball was the way you were going to make your future, that you practiced 8 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
By yourself or with others?
Well, a combination. Sometimes by myself, and sometimes we would be in the Dust Bowl,
mm-hmm,
down at the Boys and Girls Club. I spent a lot of time there.
And that's the kind of devotion, it would seem to me, that it would take to play at your level. Do you think that kids today, there's so many kids today who aspire to professional sports, and a lot of kids today who see their way out as being a basketball star or a football star, do you think they understand that part of it, that it takes that kind of dedication, and even with that kind of dedication, you may not make it?
There are a few. I like to relate to Tim Duncan. Mm-hmm. I like Tim, and I like what he's done. You know, I believe he could have came out of college after his freshman year, but he stayed in schools, uh-huh, to get the fundamentals, the mechanics of his sport. There are a lot of people like that. Now, I believe LeBron James, he couldn't go to college. He could buy his own college now, if he wanted to. So, they were going to pay him so much money that he had to go pro. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that, because he has the body of a tight end. And I understand he did play a lot of football. And the people who are trying to play him, you know, they have not come up to his standards. So he had to go. But I like the players who learn the mechanics. And that's what I watch when I watch a basketball game.
And was that what you were doing when you were practicing 8 to 10 hours a day, just getting the fundamentals down?
Yes, I had a lot of good coaches.
I was going to ask you, who taught you the fundamentals? Did you just know it by watching, or did you have people who helped you?
I had a lot of people helping me. I had three coaches helping me, well, four coaches. Harold Hunter, who most people should know because he was one of the coaches who created a lot of things and played some professional ball when blacks weren't going into the NBA. My head coach, Robinson, and another good friend of mine, Coach Corbin, you know, he was like a dad to me. You know, he helped me a lot. And Earl Jackson. There's an Earl Jackson in every major city in the world, in the country.
Really?
Yes. He was at the Boys and Girls Club working for nothing. And then when they started paying him a salary, I thought it wasn't enough for what he was doing for the kids. So I got him a job making three times as much money. And on the day he was supposed to go take this job, he said, "I'm not going." I said, "You're not going?" He said, "No." He said, "I can't leave these kids here. They need me." I got to Russia years ago when Americans weren't supposed to be traveling to Russia. I met Khrushchev in Red Square during that era. And there was a young man there. We called him Big Dog, but the kids who came after me called him Papa Jack. And I get to Russia, and this kid asked me, he said, "How is Papa Jack?" Kids in Russia.
Wow.
I get to Vienna, Austria. Another kid came up to me and said, "Metalog, when the last time did you see Papa Jack?" I get to England, London. Another young man came up to me. He asked about Big Dog, Earl Jackson. So this man has his mark all over the world.
Yeah.
He had a birthday, and I went down to help him celebrate it. And Michael Jordan sent him a gold watch on his birthday. The best thing that he ever did was stay there with those kids because his mark is all over the world.
Wow, that's amazing. That is an amazing story.
Yes, and he helped me. He taught me how to shoot my first hook shot.
That was going to be my next question. How did you learn, how did you work on, how did you develop some of those signature moves that have been associated with you and that have made you what you are today, essentially a star? Where did the idea come from to play like that?
Dreams. I would dream them up at night. I would be in my bedroom dreaming about certain things. Another good friend of mine, he used to do the same thing. His name was Pistol Pete Maravich. And Pistol Pete would be at home in bed dreaming about certain things that he would be doing, and he wanted to do. And I paid, Pete and I, we played together a couple of years. And I said, it takes me 3 years to really teach the young kids how to play that type of ball. And it took Pete about 15 minutes. And I said, "Pete, how'd you learn so quick?" He said, "I've been watching you all my life."
Wow.
And it goes back to Papa Jack. Papa Jack has his signature on professional basketball.
Because of all the kids he helped?
Yes.
Yeah.
And through what he did for me.
Uh-huh.
And I brought it to the world. You know, the different countries and cities that I went to. One of the young men who went in the Hall of Fame with me from Italy, You know, he said that he started, he wanted to play basketball and play the pivot because he saw me when I came to this country. Then there's another basketball player who is on this show, the best damn sports show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said the same thing. He told a lady in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago, and she said, well, Metalock, he goes to my church. And he said, yeah, I know him. He said, because he started me to playing basketball. I wanted to play basketball because of him.
Let's talk about visions and dreams for a second. You're talking about that tonight to the film people gathering at the Halton Theater on this March 25th, 2008, in case we repeat this program.
Yes.
You told Larry Topman, who writes for the Charlotte Observer, that you never had a dream that you were unable to fulfill, that everything that you set out to do, you've been able to accomplish.
Yes.
Why? How do you suppose that happened?
Miss Hooper, my history teacher, when we were losing our football games, she said to me, she said, you fellas don't have that bulldog's tenacity and stick-to-itness. And I never forgot that. I believe that God gives us dreams, visions. And when we get one, don't let anybody move you from it. No matter how bad things may look, stick with it. Stand your ground and work on it. They say Michael Jordan didn't make his high school basketball team when he was growing up. It wasn't because Michael wasn't that good. That some of the other kids were a little better at the time. But nobody stopped him from his vision and his dream. He stayed with it. And he worked hard. And he worked harder. And now this man is the best basketball player that ever lived.
So part of it's talent, part of it's timing, and part of it is being the last man standing. Tenacity. Never give up.
That's right. And the first to get out there.
But what if you follow that advice and you don't achieve your dreams? I suppose you were lucky, obviously incredibly talented, and you were obviously a workaholic when it came to basketball till you got the fundamentals and achieved what you've achieved. But some people can work toward that and they don't have the talent. There's something missing that will not allow them to achieve that dream. Is that possible in your mind, or is following your prescription going to assure people that they'll achieve?
I think a lot of it is also timing.
Mm-hmm.
When I went out for the Globetrotters team, there were like 125 players to make three spots open. That was it. And 100 of those young men were jumping like Michael Jordan. And I said to myself, what are you doing here? But I made up my mind I was not going back to Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I stuck with it. I saw players who were leaving on the midnight bus going home. And I was happy because... they didn't have that bulldog tenacity. When things got tough, it's one of the greatest third basemen of all time. His name was Ponnell Woods, and he became our manager with the Globetrotters.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Ponnell one time, I said, Ponnell, tell me this. When someone hit a ball down to you on third base and it takes a bad hop, what do you do? He said, I hop bad with it. So there are times when things get tough, you got to hop bad, too.
Metalark Lemon is our guest on WFAE's Charlotte Talks. what are you going to tell these people tonight? Well, you're talking about visions and dreams and pursuing your dreams. And this is called Film People because it's a bunch of people, but I've got two of them right here, as a matter of fact, taping this conversation. They want to be filmmakers. Tough business.
Yes, very tough.
Highly competitive. But a lot of opportunity out there because there are a lot of companies making all kinds of different video presentations, not just Hollywood films, but what do you tell them?
Don't let anybody move you off your spot. This is my spot, and I'm not going to move off of it, no matter what happens. I when I lived in California, I used to work out at Muscle Beach, mm-hmm. and I would see a lot of stars sleeping on the beach because they didn't have any place to sleep. They didn't have any money. They didn't have any job, but they stuck with it. And several months later, you would see them starring on television shows and movies because they stuck with it. Then they were creative. Mm-hmm. You know, they lived in this, on the beach in the sand under a blanket, and they stuck with it, their dream.
How you mentioned a second ago that you, at the tryout mm-hmm. for the Globetrotters, you looked around you and you thought, "What am I doing here?"
That's right.
Because of all the people, all the talent that you saw on the court, and yet you stayed there. What was it in you that allowed you to overcome that sense of not inferiority, but that sense of, well, maybe it was inferiority, of not being as good as them, or the nervousness that must accompany that when it was your time to step up and show what you could do in the face of everything you'd just seen? What was it about you that allowed you to do that?
I think one of the things was I didn't have any place else to go. I didn't have any place else to go. I had to stay there. I had no place else.
So you couldn't come home. Your daddy wasn't going to let you come.
No, well, my daddy had passed on
okay.
then. But I had no place to go. I said, well, what am I going back there for? Uh-huh. I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to do what I came out here to do. I'm going to make this team. No matter what, I'm going to make this team. And, you know, and every day, if you didn't see your name on the blackboard, you were gone. And I would go up there, and my name would be up there.
So you made the team. Did you think, in your wildest imagination, in those early days, that it would turn out for you the way it turned out for you? Because you arguably are the most famous person to ever play for the Globetrotters. And, I mean, everybody around the world knows who you are. In your wildest dreams, was that part of the plan?
No. I wanted to go back to college. And each year, it just kept getting gooder and gooder.
So, and that's a good thing.
You got to understand, when I started out, I was making $100 a week.
Uh-huh. That's a fortune.
No per diem.
Oh, God.
We had to tape our ankles. No trainer. Mm. I bought my own tape, and I taped my own.
You have to buy your own shoes, too? There was no shoe deal, I'm sure, right?
No, no. My first shoe deal I got Converse.
Uh-huh.
$10,000, and I was happy. Please.
We have to take a break here. Things have changed. We'll talk about that and what you're doing now as well in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And coming up, the final segment of this encore edition of Charlotte Talks, made possible in part by Providence Day School, inspiring in its students a passion for learning, a commitment to personal integrity, and a sense of social responsibility. Details on upcoming open houses are available at providenceday.org. And by the Charlotte Business Journal's Power Breakfast 2, Wachovia CEO Bob Steele discusses how Wells Fargo's acquisition affects Charlotte, November 20th, 7:30 a.m. at the Charlotte Convention Center. Tickets at 704-973-1143. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, the Friday News Roundup, Diane and her guests discuss Barack Obama's historic victory and his transition from candidate to commander-in-chief. They also examine efforts by Republicans to regroup after Tuesday's losses and the decision by California voters to ban gay marriage in their state. In the second hour, international news, a look at the American presidential election, reaction to it from around the world on the Diane Rehm Show.
You know, 90.7 FM WFAE keeps you company during your morning and evening commutes with the latest news and in-depth analysis. We appreciate that you rely on us as a trusted companion, and we rely on your financial support in order to keep the great stories and refreshing perspectives coming every day here on WFAE. We really are only as good as the company we keep. Thanks for spending time with us.
Now, back to Charlotte Talks.
We're back at Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Meadowlark Lemon is our guest today. He is the keynote speaker tonight, March 25th, 2008, at Film People at the Halton Theater on the campus at CPCC Community College. It's at Arts Fest at 7:30 tonight. He's the keynote speaker talking about vision and dreams, and who better to talk about that than a man who says he has achieved everything he ever set out to do. Did you set out at any time? Did you think at any time? Was it an ambition of yours at any time to be a singer?
No.
And yet, that too you achieved.
Yes.
You know, back in the day when I played music on the radio, every once in a while we'd pull out what we call in the Carolinas beach music.
Yeah.
And I knew the label said Globetrotters on it, but I didn't know that it was you. I thought it was just some studio group who called themselves the Globetrotters. I want to play this piece of music, and I want you to tell me if this is you singing, okay? Because, you know, not everything is accurate.
Yeah.
Here's Rainy Day Bells.
Bum, bum. In a batter, rainy day bells.
Bum, bum.
In a batter, rainy day bells.
Bum, bum, bum.
Back memories.
There's gonna be sunshine. Rainy day bells.
Rainy day
bells. Play by some raindrops.
Rainy day bells.
Sing out a message.
Rainy day bells.
Don't be afraid of the storm. It's somewhere the sun is shining. Through our silver lighting.
Wait and see.
So that is you singing lead on that song, is that right?
No, I'm not lead. I'm in the background.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right.
Yeah, and well, I did.
What are you doing in the background?
A lot of things. I did some of the bass also.
How did that happen?
Well, they were doing the Globetrotter cartoon.
Uh-huh.
And that's how things begin to happen. We would. Some of the songs, well, I was in all the background of all the songs that was on that album. I didn't take the lead on just some crazy things that were going on. Sometimes I took the lead in there, but, you know, I never thought that song would be what it is today.
I love that song.
Yeah. I like it too. Now, I haven't heard it in years. I haven't heard that song in at least, 20 years.
You can download that song off iTunes for 99 cents. I hope they're getting you some royalties.
You can. No, no, we didn't get any. We didn't get any royalties. I was only making, oh, gosh, at that time, I guess I was making $7,500 a year when we would start putting all this stuff together.
You know, this is timing. You talked about the shoe deal. What was it, $10,000 in the last segment, and now the $7,500 a year. Timing. All these great sports figures that we
yes.
have all grown up, none of them made any money. Until today.
Nike.
All the hot dogs make all the money now.
With Nike, I got $50,000.
Okay.
Thank you, Nike. I got $50,000 per year. So I think it was 3 years. I got something like $150,000 total. But that, it was the signs of the times.
Yeah.
And, I was one of the chaplains for the Phoenix Suns mm-hmm. basketball team, and that's when we had Charles Barkley. And Charles looked at me one day and he said, "How did you ride the bus so many hours?" I said, "Charles, if we don't ride the bus, you don't make the million." Yes.
You laid the groundwork, didn't you?
Yeah,
because...
A good thing. That was a good thing.
I mean, you played, what, 300-plus dates a year with the Globetrotters all over the country. You rode a bus, and you played at a time, in some places, in the South particularly, where your the team you were playing against stayed in a nice hotel and ate in nice restaurants,
yeah,
and you couldn't.
The best restaurant in town was the grocery store.
Huh.
Some bologna, some white bread, and some mayonnaise. If you had sardines, you had yourself some Tabasco sauce, and you sprinkle that Tabasco sauce over the sardines, and it was delicious.
Those people playing basketball today, making millions of dollars, should lay at your feet and thank you.
Several years ago, when I was with the Phoenix Suns, mm-hmm. Shaquille O'Neal was with the Lakers, and he was getting ready to go off on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked up in the stands, and he saw me. He called timeout. And he said, "Hey, you, meet me at the dressing room after the game." And I went down, and he said, "When I was a little boy growing up in New Jersey, you gave me an autographed photo, and I lost it. Would you please give me another one?"
Wow.
That took care of everything. Nobody would ever have to say how much I've done for basketball. Just that one thing. He was the most dominant force in basketball at the time, and probably still is. And he wanted my autograph. Mm. That was something that I cherish.
We were talking a second ago about recording, and you've done several albums. One of them is a kids' album called My Kids. I've not heard this, and I couldn't find it. Otherwise, I would have played something from it. But you say that just about everything you ever wanted to tell a child is laid out on that record. What did you want to tell them? What does that record tell kids?
That I love them. That I love my kids. And I, the other night, I was getting ready to go to bed, and Caleb came up. Caleb is 6 feet tall. And he came up and hugged my neck and said, "Dad, I love you."
Mm.
And he went on back to his room to do his filming thing that he's doing now. So, these are the little things that mean a lot to parents. And I think it's time that parents begin to give their kids something also. No matter how tough it is, you parents out there, never leave your kids. Never, ever leave your kids for anything.
Meaning what?
Never leave your kids. Never separate yourself from them. No matter how bad things are at home, stay with your kids. Stay with your family. That's what I would tell the kids today, the parents today for their kids. Stick with your kids and tell them how much you love them.
Michael in Charlotte is calling in, and he wants to talk about this very topic, as a matter of fact. Michael, welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
As a father of six, and you pretty much just answered my question, because I wanted you to just speak to, of all the fame and glory that came with being a Harlem Globetrotter, I think your words just now just spoke to my question with regards to your role as a father. And how that compares to the fame. If you knew that your role as a parent was needed more so than going out there and being a Globetrotter, would you have been willing to walk away from it all?
Totally. With what I know now, totally. I stayed with basketball at one point because I could give my kids a nice home and a good education. And I did. And I poured all that into my family at the time. And, you know, I got a couple of ugly kids out there, but most of them, they're doing well. And I'm proud of that. And I believe that the other kids are going to, two kids, they're going to come around too. But everybody else is doing very well. And I've been able to stick with them and bless them, and because I'm blessed.
Are you a hard act to follow? I mean, a lot of kids of stars have trouble establishing themselves and their own identity because they have so much to live up to, and the shadow thrown by their famous parents is so long that they feel that they can't meet up to it. Is that part of a problem? Has it ever been a problem for you?
It's not a problem
okay. For
me and my kids. I let them know, hey, you don't have to try to live up to what I've done. And Caleb, he plays hockey, and the guys out there saying, "Kill him, knock it down his throat." And I just say, Caleb, if you don't love it, what you're doing, stop.
Yeah.
I said, because you don't have to live up to it, what I've done. I got your back. I covered you all over, man. You don't have to do anything like that. And one of my grandkids, they played on the same college football team last year.
Huh.
You know, and I told them, hey, I'm coming out to see you play because, you know, I love you, and you don't have to prove anything to me. Just go out there and do something that you love doing.
Michael, thank you for your call. I have a couple of emails I want to share with you too, but I've actually thought a lot about this, and I'm curious what your take on it is. There have been a lot of people, not a lot, there's a handful of people who are truly, truly, truly successful beyond anybody's wildest dreams. You would be one of them in the field that they chose to pursue. And then there are others who just try as they might, can't do it, or reach a middle stage, and that's where it ends for them. What is it that the spectacular successes have? Is it just what you talked about before, tenacity and having the vision and the dream and the stick-to-itiveness? Is that all it is?
They didn't give up, no matter how bad things were. You find a millionaire that's lost everything. It's easier for him to become a millionaire again because he know how to become a millionaire. And he never quit. You know, he know what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I have time for this.
Okay.
There was a lady. She was born in Mississippi. We became friends. So she moved to Pittsburgh. Her husband left her with two kids, two girls. And this lady started helping other people with their kids. And she would sell miniature sweet potato pies on the corner for a penny.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told us that, I know you're saving your money. I can show you how to buy this two-story house. So she bought the house, and she started taking in renting rooms. I don't know how much she rented them for. But then she moved to California. She took her savings and bought a motel, 16 rooms. Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell, and we would go in from time to time, and we would pool our money, and we would have a feast. Those ladies could cook, man. They would do the sweet potato pie and the banana pudding and everything else that went with it. And we became friends. So I noticed one thing. She couldn't read or write. But she couldn't even drive a car. And her friends would drive her down the street, and she'd see a piece of property. And she said, what did that sign say? Did that say for sale? She said, yeah, well, let's go back and buy it because we can make some money off of this.
She knew money.
And she wanted to buy a house in Holmby Hills out in Los Angeles. And she went to borrow $500,000 from the bank, and they turned her down. Said, you don't have any collateral. We can't give you $500,000. She and her daughter came back to that bank the next day with a big paper box with $500,000 in it. And when she bought her house, when she found out who her neighbors were, she fainted.
Who were they?
The Hiltons. this magazine that's out there now, Playboy.
Oh, Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next door to him too.
Uh-huh.
When she passed on, she left one of her daughters $31 million and the house and the Rolls Royce. She didn't quit. She stuck with it.
Yeah.
She hung in there.
Meadowlark Lemon, our guest on WFAE. Vaughn in Charlotte writes, could you ask Meadowlark about the only time the Globetrotters lost? I believe it was the early 70s against the New Jersey Reds.
Yeah, it was the Washington Generals. Okay. But we lost more games than that. We lost against the College All-Americans also.
Okay. You're an ordained minister. You became an ordained minister in what, 1986? What led you to that?
It was a calling. And, you know, when you call to do this. You know, if your mama calls, you don't do it. Of course, this is not something to play with. But when God calls you to do something, and you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're given a vision, you know, and you don't fulfill the vision today, maybe the vision for tomorrow. But don't give up and don't give in. Stand your ground.
I have less than a minute left, but tell me as quickly as you can about the Meadowlark Lemon Foundation.
It's a foundation that we started. It's put on hold today because the things I want to do, I want to do it right. This is the greatest country in the world because I've seen all the others, you know, and the other countries are not bad. It's just our country is just so great. No one in our country should go to bed hungry, and everyone should have the opportunity to get a good education. And that's what that foundation is going to do, and we're going to find the finances to do it with.
And you still, I'm told you still play basketball every day. Is that true?
That's correct.
You love this game, don't you?
I love this game. I love the NBA, and I'm probably one of the greatest promoters of the NBA that ever lived. And I enjoy these great athletes.
You like the Bobcats?
I like the Bobcats.
That's a trick question.
I like the Bobcats because of their owner.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Bob Johnson.
And Michael Jordan.
Meadowlark, I got to let you go because we're out of time. Thank you so much for the hour. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and be blessed.
Meadowlark Lemon speaks tonight, 7:30 at the Halton Theater for film people.
Yes, that was that cat, all right.